Welcome to the Sports Passion Podcast. Your host, Lars Marendorf.
Hello and welcome to the Sports Passion Podcast. This is going to be another episode about the Seattle Kraken. Why? Because they did a move that surprised pretty much the whole league and me as well. They signed a German goaltender, so obviously I had to reach out to someone in Seattle to get some in-depth information there, some opinions from Seattle, and I got Andy Eid on the mic. Andy works and writes for Sound of Hockey. He also works for NHL.com. He's part of their Sound of Hockey podcast, a great podcast. I will link the show. I will link Andy's Twitter account in the show notes. So I'm talking to Andy Eid, and yeah, enjoy it. Philip Grubauer signs with Seattle, and much more to come after the break. So, as I said in the introduction, this is the third episode in the last about 2 weeks regarding the Seattle Kraken. I hope I pronounced that right. and I got someone who is, I didn't ask him, who's living near Seattle, I would guess, Andy Eid from Sound of Hockey. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Lars. I'm glad to be here.
And I mentioned just, I didn't ask you, you are living near Seattle. Anything specific
I'm in Seattle. I'm in the north side of Seattle.
I'm in the city limits. So,
yep.
Seattle is definitely on my bucket list. There was one big reason more regarding coming there. That is the hockey team they got, and we're going to talk about that. But you're a first-time guest, so before we start getting into the new hockey team in Seattle, could you just give a short summary of how you got into hockey, how hockey caused you to be interested, and what you're doing with the guys from Sound of Hockey, which is one of the greatest podcasts. I'll link everything that is available right now online, I think.
I got into hockey back when I was in school, when I was about 16 or 17, I think maybe 17. And a guy showed up in my class, and he was here. He had moved here from Canada. He was here to play for the Seattle Thunderbirds, which is in the Western Hockey League, which is, if you're not familiar, a major junior league here. That's a development league for the NHL. And I knew of the Thunderbirds, but I thought they were men playing like minor pro hockey. But come to find out, they were guys my age. So he talked us all into going to a game. And then about 10 minutes into it, I realized that this is the game I loved. And I couldn't believe I hadn't been watching it up until then. So it just kind of took off from there, my interest. From there, I found the NHL and I've been a fan ever since. I've been involved in it ever since. And, so when Seattle sounded like they were going to get an NHL team here, John Barr, who I think you've had on before, he had been running a kind of a grassroots website called NHL to Seattle to try and get just drum up support for bringing hockey here, professional hockey here. And he reached out to me to see if I wanted to write some stuff for his site. And I did. And then we started a podcast, the Sound of Hockey podcast, and so that's growing. And then we've changed the website to also to be soundofhockey.com. So we're writing a lot of content on there to go with the podcast. So we're kind of a little bit of a network now.
Yeah, and I mean, I talked to John before. He did a great job with pretty much the team in limbo. There was no guarantee that there's going to be a team in Seattle. But I like the town. I like the area. I've been there once, but just changing flights. So I hope I can get back there soon. Loved the Seattle Supersonics back when, and we saw some of the Sonics players. They looked a little different, I would say, when they were on stage at the Seattle expansion draft. But let's dive into that draft. And one thing, before we start getting into the players, one thing I would like to know is, how did you like the whole day? Because to me, there was so much build up there. There was so much excitement regarding, okay, yeah, this could be the last expansion draft for a long, long time. Maybe ever, I don't know. But then during the day, pretty much every single pick leaked. There was no surprises left to me because you had pretty much the complete list. I mean, there could have been something where there was a player reported and they choose someone different, but nothing like that happened. So just looking at the process, and you were there, how excited was it for the crowd to get to know the names that they already knew? I mean, they did a lot of great videos there, a lot of Seattle superstars coming on there. But how did you like the process in general?
Yeah, I think the fans still got a lot of enjoyment out of it. You know, every time they announced a player, and like you said, all during the day, we heard who the players were. We knew the whole roster by the time the party started there. But every time they announced a new player, there was still a big cheer from the crowd. So I don't think it did anything to diminish the excitement. It got really good TV ratings here in the U.S., so people still tuned in. You know, there wasn't much else hockey-wise on TV to watch, so if you're a hockey fan, you were still watching anyways. I think we were hoping to hear some trades, which we didn't. But overall, I think the show went off really well. You mentioned they had a lot of Seattle celebrities, Seattle sports stars from different sports that showed up to help announce the team name. They got six players there, which was pretty surprising because of how quickly they had to get on a plane and get there. You know, none of them knew until either that day before or so. So it was good to see six guys there. First time we've seen the jerseys in real life, so yeah, that was kind of exciting. And you know, not only was there a big crowd there at the park, they did limit how many people could be in that park because, you know, they probably could have had more people. But I don't know if you watched it on TV, you saw that it was right on the shores of Lake Union here in downtown Seattle. And there were people out there in boats and kayaks and paddleboards and canoes and you name it. It was so packed in the lake that you probably could have walked across the lake without getting your feet wet. So I think overall that was a huge success. And the fact that names were leaked didn't seem to diminish it, the excitement from anybody.
You mentioned a good point there. There were no trades announced, and even the next day, there was, I think in the next 2 days, there was one trade. Mm-hmm. I think Tyler Pitlick was the only trade they made there. How surprised were you that there was pretty much no activity? What was expected was that the general managers from the other teams would have learned something from the Vegas expansion draft, so they would be more tight to give up assets there for protecting players or for forcing Seattle to telling them to pick another player, but that there was pretty much no activity at all surprised me a little bit. How surprised were you about that?
Yeah, I was very surprised because, you know, we had heard about how the general managers had learned their lesson, but there was also this situation with the flat salary cap, and we thought that even though they've learned their lessons, some of them were in positions where they had to shed some salary, and that would still help Seattle, you know, wrestle some extra draft picks or something out of some of them, just so they could move higher contracts. But I think what happened is the teams did a good job of managing their team, and you saw the day before the protection list came out, a ton of trades went down in the NHL, and a lot of those players that got traded were guys that were on the radar to be taken by Seattle in the expansion draft. And so I think that kind of those teams did a good job of protecting themselves as much as possible. And some of the teams like Tampa Bay that we thought for sure they would be room there for some sort of side deal, they had four or five good players available. I think they just said, go ahead and take one. We're willing to lose one. We're not giving up anything extra. And so I think you saw that around the league, and that kind of hampered a little bit what their ability to do was. So they couldn't quite pull off the big set of trades that Vegas did. And, you know, but if you see what they've done since then, though, they've kind of made up for that a little bit with free agency. And there was a couple trades after that, too, that they got a little bit back. They have some draft picks coming, but not for this year.
They sure did. They sure did. We're going to talk about the free agents in a couple of minutes. Mm-hmm. But regarding the players they selected, there were some superstars available. Obviously, the big topic on the weekend was Carey Price, to the surprise of a lot of people. He was not protected there by the Canadians. You had someone like Tarasenko there available. So there were a couple of big name players, but in the end, from the list of the Seattle team selected, there were not a lot of big name players. I mean, Mark Giordano was one. Mm-hmm. Jordan Eberle, the other one. Who were guys that you were really surprised about that they picked, and who were some that you expected them to pick when you looked at their first 30 player selection?
Yeah, it was a really interesting process. Like you said, there were some big names. They didn't go for them. They went young in a lot of cases, which was a surprise. So there were some teams where you thought, wow, that's the guy. And like you look at Philadelphia, the Flyers, and there were two players, veteran players, who had big salaries. In Jacob Voracek and in James Van Riemsdyk, I thought they'd get one of those guys. I really thought they would select Van Riemsdyk just because he can score. He's a goal scorer, and you know, he doesn't have a terrible contract, and there's only two or three more years left on it. And instead, they went with Carson Tarwinski from there, who you know not a whole lot of people had heard of. A young guy who's really hasn't really gotten into the NHL full time yet. So they went young. I think when it came down to it, Ron Francis, the general manager, has said from day one that salary cap flexibility is important, and he wants to be a team that while they could spend all their salary cap, he wanted to be able to be flexible. So at the end of the day, they took those 30 players. You know, a lot of them were young on the younger end, but they had $30 million left in the salary cap, which is quite a bit. There were only three teams, I think, that had more salary cap available when free agency started. So while they couldn't get all those trades and all those big names, Francis did set them up to have a lot of salary cap and a lot of options going forward.
And they use their options going forward. And let's start with, from the German side, the biggest name, obviously, the Seattle Kraken select Philipp Grubauer, or they sign him, not they select him, mm-hmm. but they sign him in free agency. I got to admit, I was really, really surprised that they signed Grubauer, because the one position I think that they were pretty set was goalies. They had Chris Drieger there, who they also signed for a pretty reasonable contract in my mind. And then they also had Vitek Vanacek from the Washington Capitals, whom they since have traded back. So they had a pretty good goalie duo already there. And Philipp Grubauer looked to me like someone, okay, yeah, I expected the Avs to sign him, but in the end, it turned out they didn't have the money, $5.9 million for the next 6 years. You get a Vezina Trophy-nominated goalie. So what are the expectations? What have you heard from Seattle, from the team? What are they expecting from Philipp Grubauer in the next couple of years?
Yeah, you're right, though. That was a surprise. He wasn't on our radar. When they had Drieger and Vanacek, we thought that was the combo they were going with. Ron Francis said yesterday that they didn't expect Grubauer would be available come free agency. They expected Colorado to re-sign him. So when he was available, they went for it. And like you said, they've since traded Vanacek back to Washington for a second rounder. But with Grubauer, you know, they have Drieger, they have Grubauer, and I think Grubauer last year started like 75% of the games for Colorado.
Yep.
But with Drieger there as a backup, Francis says they don't expect him to start as much. He'll still be the number one starter. Grubauer will be. But they have Drieger, and so looking at the schedule, they've got some back-to-back games, some games where they've traveled from the East Coast to the West Coast. So they expect to work Drieger in there quite a bit more than Grubauer's backup last year did. So I think definitely Grubauer's the number one goalie. You know, how many games he'll start, it's hard to say. But you will still see Drieger get in there a bit. And I think it's good to have those two tandems, two goalies that you can count on. You know, come playoff time, Grubauer should be more rested than in years past when he's played 75% of the games in the regular season. So I think that's kind of what they want to do. They have Drieger there to kind of relieve Grubauer, give him a little bit of rest so they can save him up for the playoff run.
Yeah, and you're saying come playoff time, so there's a little expectation from you how the team will perform. One thing that is, I've talked to Philipp Grubauer and I've seen him play a lot, obviously, and the one thing that I can't really get to is he really a top-notch goalie? He had those stats for the Colorado Avalanche, but they also had a great defense. And mm-hmm. I think one thing that he could benefit off is that you said that the Seattle team, the players they selected were young, and I think they also had a lot of good defensive picks there when they created that team. They've got a pretty solid defense there. Their coach, Hextall, he's been known for playing a good defensive style back in Philly. So that could also be something that maybe they have in mind when they think Philipp Grubauer, because he played at behind a good defense in Colorado, and now Seattle is going to create something like that. Obviously, not with top talent there, but also a pretty good mix there. So, have you also heard something about that, that they think he fits their style, or is it too early? I don't know how many conference calls they had yet.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't gotten into style of play, but if just looking at the roster, definitely their strength is their defensive core. They got a lot of veteran guys. You mentioned Giordano, the Adam Larson, Jamie Oleksiak, guys like that are veteran, solid defensemen. So they do have a good defense. And actually, I think, you know, part of playing defense is what you get out of your forwards too. Yeah. And while they don't have a lot of top end scorers up front, they do have guys who are good two-way centers and two-way forwards. So I think overall they're going to be a strong defensive team. So I think that'll benefit both Grubauer and Driedger. And you know, you look at Grubauer's numbers, one thing that stands out is like his save percentage has been pretty consistent.
Yep.
You know, even back when he played for Washington. So it seems like no matter who he's played with, he's always put up a pretty good save percentage. So I think that's something that you're optimistic about, that with the type of team Seattle has, that he should still be able to put up some strong numbers in net.
And Gruber was the first signing they did. Alex Wenberg was another one, and you mentioned the Sound of Hockey homepage. You have an article about him there. Could you just sum up in short what you think he brings to the table there for Seattle to perform as one of their maybe two-way forwards there?
Yeah, he played for Florida last year, and he was on their second line for most of the year. He played with Jonathan Huberdeau and Patrick Hornquist, who are two pretty good players, and he held his own with them. He had his best year scoring, but his shooting percentage was career high. So I don't know that he'll score that much again. But he is a good possession player. He plays good defense. He plays in all ends of the ice. So he will give you a lot of depth, and I think he'll probably slot in at the number two center. It depends on how long it takes Yanni Gourde to come back from his injury, but I think those two guys are probably your top two centers to start the season, Gordon and Wenberg. So Wenberg, yeah, he's a smart player. He's still pretty young. He's 26, so he could still be even getting better. But I think you're going to see him, you know, when he's on the ice, that they'll win the shift. They'll have the puck more than they don't. So I think that's just another guy that's just going to, you know, play both ends for you.
And I think that the contract as well is pretty reasonable, $4.5 million for 3 years. I think that that's wise cap management. They signed some players now, but they still have some money left there to do other trades there coming down to the season, or maybe towards the trade deadline there. The third player they picked up in free agency is Jaden Schwartz, who's coming in there from St. Louis. Also, like Grubauer, a guy who's won a Stanley Cup before. He's 29 years old, and he also got a five-year contract. Grubauer's got 6 years, $5.5 million. He was a guy who was, there were a lot of teams out there that would have liked to sign him there as well. So what are your thoughts on him? How would you see him fitting in the lineup there?
Yeah, I think he probably starts as one of your top line guys. You know, he's a guy who's has some scoring pedigree in the league. He's had some 20 goal seasons. I think, you know, he's had that experience of going to a Stanley Cup. So I would pencil him in as your top line winger, maybe opposite Eberle on the other side. Yeah, I think that's a solid pickup. You know, he's from Saskatchewan. And I know his father recently passed away and his sister had some health issues. He wanted to be closer to home. So Seattle's a little bit closer than St. Louis was. He talked to him yesterday. He was also pretty excited. He's been to the city before. And I think he's got some leadership in him. I think especially with the younger team that they have, it's good to have a guy like that who's been there before and done it. And he sounds German, but he's from Regina, Saskatchewan. So he's not German.
yeah, or it's
with a name like Schwartz, but yeah. Obviously some German descent there. We'll say.
Yeah, a lot of the names. I mean, you had Bayreuther, who's sounds like a city in Bavaria. So, some familiar names there. And like I said, I was completely surprised by the Grubauer pick there. I think it's great. I think it's also great for the German links to Seattle, because there's more interest now, obviously, in the team right away from the start. And that's going to be great. You mentioned that you hope that they are going to reach the playoffs there. What are your expectations regarding where they would rank in the Pacific Division, one division that is a little top-heavy with Vegas in there as one of the favorites there. But other than that, there are a lot of teams who have question marks there.
Mm-hmm.
There are some still rebuilding teams there, the Californian teams, obviously, but the Kings got a little better there. What are your expectations if you would say right now, what would be your ranking regarding that, that division?
Well, I think obviously Vegas is the favorite. They were one of the better teams in the whole league last year. I think Vegas, I think Edmonton has done some stuff to improve themselves. And I think Calgary maybe took a little bit of a step forward. You mentioned the Kings. Anaheim still has a lot of young prospects that they're going to count on, so I'm not sure that they're quite there yet. So I think Seattle is in that mix, maybe the second tier behind Vegas and Edmonton. So I think because of the way the division is, we forgot to mention Vancouver. Vancouver is still is definitely rebuilding, although they've got a lot of young talent. But I think Seattle will be in the mix to make the playoffs out of there. Will they? I don't know. But I think as long as they're – and for me, the expectation, as long as they're competitive and in the playoff race, I think that's a successful season. I think a lot of people said, oh, well, Vegas went all the way to the final their first year, so should Seattle. But that's not quite how it works. And I think even that Vegas team, even with some of the moves they made, that was still kind of a crazy – I think once-in-a-lifetime thing. I don't think you could expect a brand-new team to do that every time out. So I think we have to kind of calm down the expectations a little bit. And, you know, for me, if they're competitive at the end of the season, they're still playing for something, I think that'll be a wildly successful first season.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned Vegas. They will play their first regular season game in Vegas. They will have a road trip to begin the season. The arena will be finished, or I think it's just a buffer to be able to have some more days or weeks to finish if there's still something that has to be built there or finished inside the arena. I think the run by Vegas was, it was great. They built a great team, but they also got lucky a couple of times there during that run. And I think that the team they have now this year or the last season, next season is way better than the first version of the Vegas Golden Knights. But that one reached the cup final, so you got to be lucky during the playoff seasons. Obviously, you mentioned Vancouver, and they will play their first home game against Vancouver. Obviously, the league tries to create some sort of a rivalry there. Is there already something like that? Have you heard and read something from Vancouver? Was there maybe something like that regarding minor league teams across the border? Or is it something that will be built up from scratch and you need a season and hopefully some playoff series there to create a real rivalry?
Yeah, I think before the Kraken were a thing, I think Vancouver and Seattle have always been pretty friendly. They've never really competed in sports, you know, other than maybe at the junior hockey level. But I think obviously they're closest. They're like a 3-hour drive, you know, 2.5-hour drive from Seattle. So geographically, yes, they make sense to be the rivals. And I think that both sides have had fun with that so far, you know, poking fun at each other online and stuff. But I think real rivalries are born out of a playoff series, right? I mean, I think back to Vegas and everybody thought LA was going to be their main rival. But then they played San Jose 2 or 3 years in a row in the playoffs, and that became the rivalry. So I think it's not out of the realm that someone like San Jose or, you know, Colorado or somebody that you end up having an intense playoff series with ultimately becomes the rival. But for now, it's going to be Vancouver just because of the geography of it. But usually, like you said, it takes a playoff series. It takes some kind of thing to happen, something on the ice to happen to really create kind of an organic rivalry. So I think the jury's still out on that. I think it'll be fun to, you know, for the two teams to poke fun at each other, Vancouver and Seattle, to start with. But I look forward to whoever they play in the first playoffs or the first couple of years, if they get into the playoffs and who their matchups are. And I think that team will become the first real rival.
Last question. How will the access be for you guys? You were at the expansion draft. Is there one representative of you always going to the home games in the future? How are you guys going to cover the team?
Yeah, we're going to give it full coverage. You know, there's 2 or 3 of us that write for the team, and I think we expect to have somebody there. You know, I also do some writing for NHL.com. Okay. So, if I'm not there for the Kraken, I'll be there for NHL.com. But so if you go to our website, and our podcast is going to keep going, but if you go to the website, you know, you'll see a lot of content up there. We try to get something posted on there every day. So we try to give you daily content. And it's been growing. It's been fun to see. We've created kind of a little community here in Seattle of hockey fans. And, you know, the team has been very generous with us and giving us access to players and coaches and for both the podcast and the website. So we only expect things to get bigger and better from here on out.
Yeah, and I think they sure will. Andy Ide, at Andy Ide is the Twitter account. Andy, thanks a lot for your time. I will link you. I will link the blog as well in the show notes here. It was fun talking to you, and yeah, wish the best for the Kraken and for you guys as well. And you mentioned you're covering the NHL.com website there as well, so I'm looking forward to a lot of content from you and from Son of Hockey.
Sounds great. It's been a pleasure, Lars.
So that was Andy Ide talking about the Seattle Kraken, and I gotta admit, and I mentioned it, I was surprised that Grubauer signed there. I thought that the Avs would work it out. This is about the Seattle Kraken, but I think that the Avs had a bad day, one of the worst days in Joe Sakic's general manager history, and Philip Grubauer is a great goalie for Seattle. I'm not too sure, I'm not too sold on him as being a superstar goalie, but hey, they have a defensive-minded team, I would guess, the Kraken there in their first season, so I don't know, maybe he just is what they need, a veteran goalie there. He's a veteran now, he's a Stanley Cup winner, he's an experienced goalie, he went with the Avalanche for a couple of playoff runs, obviously not the goal they wanted to reach there, winning the Stanley Cup hopefully, but hey, Seattle is a team he can play for. He's got a great backup there. He doesn't have to play 75%, as Andy mentioned there. So I think he's a good pickup there. The other guys, Wenberg and Schwartz, they are good pieces there for the top six, top nine, regarding wherever you want to play Wenberg there. So I think they have a solid team there. The Pacific Division, there will be two playoff spots probably open there. If you say Vegas is one, Andy said that Edmonton is one. I'm not too sold on the Edmonton Oilers right now, but let's say Edmonton is one. So there's space there. There are some bad teams in that division still. And so I think Seattle can compete for the playoffs in their first season. And it's going to be great to see them. It's going to be great to hear the fans there in the arena. So I'm looking forward to the Seattle Kraken there. And yeah. That was the third episode in the last four regarding the expansion team. As always, and I ask that in Germany as well, as always, I would like to have feedback. If you guys like the English episodes, if you guys want more episodes with experts and other guys from North America, please contact me at Lars_Mar is the Twitter feed, obviously. It's also linked in the show notes, so if you have ideas and opinions and requests regarding other shows in the future, please reach out to me. And other than that, thanks for listening, and yeah, have a great day.
Talk to you soon. Thanks for listening. Bye, guys.